This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 47 for Thursday, March 18th, 2010. Think about it. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at outoflinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line After Hours in the iTunes Store. Well, welcome. Here we are Thursday night again for Out of Line After Hours. And joining me, as always, the auto extremist.
John, how are you? I've pissed off the propeller heads in BMW land, and all I can say was the cosmic rays. It got to me, and so, you know, I've been pilloried widely this week.
Because of the column that you wrote. Yeah. Well, and let's get back to that in just a moment, but I have to introduce our other guest here tonight, Stephanie Brindley from Auto Pacific. Great having you here,
Steph. Hey, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
We should note to our other viewers, too, that David Welch, who's normally here from Business Week and Bloomberg, is in some sort of indoctrination camp.
Yeah, he's getting a chip installed.
He's having a chip put in his brain so that he will only speak Bloomberg speak. But we can't wait to get David back here at some point in the future. But let's get back to your column a minute. You don't like what BMW is doing with its advertising.
Well, it was truth versus joy, truth in engineering versus BMW's new joy thing. And, you know, I think some of the BMW loyalists went overboard. I was talking, you know, this image business is what I like to focus on, and it's so hard to develop an image. So it's just painstaking, takes years to develop and solidify an image, and BMW's done a wonderful job with ultimate driving machines. Mm-hmm. And then they've veered off, and they say it's not replacing ultimate driving machines, it's just joy. Well, you know, joy can be used by any car company, Chevrolet, Hyundai, Ford, Toyota. It's just, and I know why they're doing, we're broadening our appeal, we're going after other people, and, you know, we'll still keep our hardcore loyalists. I'm not so sure, you know, you have to stay focused. And one guy wrote me in and said, well, this is to attract more women to BMW. And I wrote back and said, hey, women had, you know, they didn't have any problems buying BMW before. And I was just like, basically, you crazy. But, you know, I just think it's the wrong way to go. And here's Audi, who has stayed focused. And, you know, not everything they do is great. But, boy, they've stayed focused, and they are the coming luxury brand. And as far as the German luxury brands go, Audi's on an upward trajectory. BMW is sort of treading water. And Mercedes, it depends on what day it is, where they're going. But Audi is I think it's the German brand.
Well, I agree with you. You know, using joy as a tagline is smiley, shiny, happy.
Yeah, shiny, happy, smiley people. And it's just like, what does that have to do with BMW? Yes, there's a lot of joy in driving a BMW, but you don't say joy.
No.
It's ultimate driving machine. It's.
I would agree. You know, you stick with ultimate driving machine. And a couple of the commercials that I saw did the joy and then ran some incentive pricing on it. And that doesn't strike me as supporting the ultimate driving machine.
And the funny thing is they have a national dealer ad that is ultimate driving machine.
Right.
And you see it and say, oh, okay, that's still BMW, and it's got an incentive at the end. But juxtaposed against this joy stuff, it's just painful. And then they had this huge insert, the Wall Street Journal, that folded out. And on one side was all the shiny, happy people, and on the other side was that new concept sports, electric sports car, you know, which was cool, but it was just like, boy, you guys really need to rein this stuff in before it gets a life of its own.
It's very difficult for a manufacturer to maintain that focus, but that's how you survive over the long term, is holding on to that focus. And sure, you might expand into one segment or another to try and get some more buyers in, but every brand that you guys could talk, that any of us could talk about, where they start to really lose it is when they stop focusing on what their core personality is and what their core values are, especially with somebody like BMW, who is so solid.
Yeah. And, you know, they're going to do a you know, they're tired of seeing Mini get all the laurels, so they're going to take that platform, which is a BMW platform, right, and do a new small BMW, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but the car I'm waiting for is the direct-injected turbocharged four-cylinder 1 Series,
right,
that they're working on. I just wish they'd do a body transplant on the 1 Series because I think it's just really ordinary looking. And they need the spiritual successor of the 2002.
Well, which is what the 1 was supposed to.
And that's not it, but right, they need to do 1.
Right.
So
the 1 is really fun to drive. I really enjoy driving it. I was thinking, I don't have to look at it.
Right.
Yeah, but the price point, the 4-cylinder needs to be more affordable, and they need to go after the hardcore enthusiast driver with it. And they'll get all the hardcore BMW people, the propeller heads back with that car. But, you know, they'd have no plans to do it.
Right. No, I've got a 135 that I'm test driving right now. Love the car. I mean, I like that car. But it's $38,000. No nav system, no heated seats. No, and it's like, geez, guys, couldn't I buy a 3 Series for this? And so what's the purpose of the 1 if it's going to be that expensive?
Yeah, they need to do a 2002 successor that's got everything you want on it for like $24,999. No more.
Right. But, you know, I disagree in saying I think it's a mistake for them to go with the Mini platform and go front-wheel drive. I mean, what'd you do Mini for if now you're just going to take that platform and bring it into BMW? Right. I think it's a mistake.
And how much smaller than 1 Series are you going to be able to go in the United States?
Yeah.
Well, you can't. I can't even fit in the back seat of a 1, so it's a 4-seater and name only.
It's just worrisome, and I point this out in my column. There's got to be a faction of executives in BMW who it's one week it's the X6, the next week it's the 5GT, the next week it's, oh, let's do our version of the Mini. It's just like, where's the guy in the meeting say, hey, wait a minute, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Can't we refocus? What's wrong here? You know, it's just worrisome to me. And BMW enthusiasts should be worried.
Yep.
Well, you heard from them, though, this week.
Oh, yeah. So I'm like public enemy number 1. But, you know, it's a space I occupy weekly.
You're comfortable there.
Hey, what we should let everybody know is that earlier, just about an hour or two ago, we had John Krafcik, who is the CEO of Hyundai Motors America, here. He had a tight business schedule, travel schedule, and he wasn't able to be here live with us tonight. But Peter and Stephanie and I all shot a segment with him, and let's go to that interview right now, and then we'll be back later live to go after your questions for Rapid Fire. Welcome to this special part with John Krafcik, the CEO of Hyundai Motor America. And John, great to have you here on the set of Autoline After Hours.
Thanks, John. It is great to be here.
So Hyundai seemingly is doing nothing wrong these days. You guys are just boosting sales, boosting market share, ratcheting up all these awards and all that. Can you keep the momentum going, or is this the plateau year?
Well, that's our big challenge. You know, we went from, you know, growing market share a tenth of a point or so every year for the past 10 years, and we've gone now from 3% in 2008 to 4.2% in 2009. That's a big jump, 1.2 percentage points a share. And it looks like so far this year we'll continue that upward trend. We're tracking around 4.5 so far in the first quarter, and that's great. So the momentum seems to continue. We've got good product backing it up. In the end, it all comes down to having great cars, and we've got a bunch of good cars we're launching right now.
Right now you got the new Sonata coming out, and you got the new Tucson. That's not out yet, is it? The
Tucson,
or is it?
Tucson is out. Tucson
it's
launched
in the show
first.
In
Tromes now is a 2010, and our friends at Edmunds tell us last week, we still can't believe this statistic, but it's from Edmunds, so it must be true. Tucson was the most searched car, the most shopped car on the Edmunds website. Tucson.
No, that's
Tucson.
All the Hyundai guys going and typing.
I can't explain it. I just can't explain it. But we've heard from our dealers the showroom demand is great. Sales are fantastic. We're absolutely production constrained. We're selling at about 60% sales efficiency, which essentially means we're selling this car off the trucks as they come in. Typically in our industry, a 30-40% sales efficiency is as high as you can get. We're hitting 60 right now on this car.
That's a red hot segment too. I mean,
it is. Yeah.
Ford Escape's been going great. RAV4, CRV, all of them are just screaming along. Why is that? Why is that segment so hot?
You know, I think a lot of the entries now are delivering much better fuel economy than before. It used to be that the smaller SUVs and crossovers crossovers weren't so much better than, say, Explorer-sized stuff. And now, suddenly, we've got, you know, our car's 22, city 31 highway. Equinox has a 32 mile per gallon highway rating. So there's a lot to like in that segment. And the cars are looking better, I think, too. And you don't give up that much from a fun-to-drive point of view. And our price points, I think, are terrific, you know?
Well, another element, too, is they are a little bit cheaper than, a little bit less expensive, I should say, than the Explorer-sized vehicles. And in an environment where people have less money to spend, that's a good answer for them.
Yeah, and no question that's helped our brand. You know, during this whole period, 2009, it was a time when a lot of American car buyers thought beyond their default choice. You know, I'm just going to go buy the Camry, or I'm just going to go get another BMW. And they heard, they took a look at us. You know, they had heard about Hyundai and said, you know, maybe I'll give these guys a try. I've heard some buzz. I saw their Super Bowl ads. My neighbor bought one. I saw this Consumer Report thing. And so a lot of that came together and seemed to gel for us in 2009. I think we had a critical mass of public acclaim and some of our marketing initiatives and a couple of new products in 09, not big volume products, but important ones. Elantra Touring, and then Genesis Coupe, which really fleshed us out a bit and gave us an emotional element, which we had been lacking. And so that gelled in 09. And then for 10, our big story is, you know, Tucson, but our really big, important launch, which is Sonata, which is just coming to market now in volume. And so far, guys, wow. We're looking at 12,000, 13, maybe 15,000 Sonatas.
For the month, this month, March, you're talking about.
Those are some big numbers for a Hyundai midsize car.
So when did the light bulb go off? Because
how did this happen?
Well, Hyundai, you know, I mean, come on, you're going along and jettisoning American leaders left and right. You sort of up the quality, so you stabilize that. And then all of a sudden, I want to know when design became important and when vehicle dynamics became important, because you had none of that. Yeah. I mean, you brought the quality forward, and then all of a sudden it's just like, oh, they've decided they're going to be in the car business for real. What happened?
Yeah.
Explain it in 5 minutes or less.
I think so. So here's the thing, right? 2001, more or less, our chairman said, hey, we got to be the number one brand in quality in the U.S. And darn if we didn't do it by 2004, J.D. Power IQS. We passed Toyota. We were one of the top three brands in the industry, including premium brands. So we nailed quality and kind of built that into the ethos of the company, and it really stuck. At the same time, we began launching this new generation of products. Stuff you guys have heard us discuss is 24/7, seven all new products in 24 months, starting with the original Tucson and then going through six other products, essentially replacing the whole lineup. And I like to refer to that set of cars as really competent and pretty darn competitive. It got us squarely in the midst of all those segments in which we competed. But really, the leadership gene wasn't there in those cars. You know, they were really good. They were as good as their competitors were at a lower price, and that was the selling proposition. And we decided, three or four years ago, that we would take a different approach. Unabashed leadership is the goal in everything we do. So from design to fuel economy, we're now the industry's leader in fuel economy, but continuing to build on that quality, reliability, durability base that's so important for our brand in particular. And you're seeing the fruits of that now. Genesis Coupe was the first car that showed we could build an exciting dynamic sports car in a configuration that really had been missing for a while, 2-liter turbo in a rear-wheel drive car. Very cool. It's done very well for us. And now with the new sheet metal that you're seeing on vehicles like Tucson and Sonata, don't know if you like the term fluidic sculpture. That's what we're calling it. We're sticking with it. It describes, though, this new design language that we've got, which is unique to Hyundai. It's ours. And we're striving in everything we do to not follow, but now to lead. And you're seeing that in a lot of different things we're doing on the product side. I like that. It's good.
Talk about, because I find that interesting, that fluidic sculpture works for me, actually.
Yeah.
Why you're putting emotion into the design. Talk about that. Because Hyundai's to the past, like you said, very competent, nothing wrong with them, but ho-hum, so boring to look at. And now your designs are really starting to pop. Why? I mean, sure, it should be important, but you talk about putting emotion in design.
Yeah.
Why?
So I go back. We got a real simple strategy at Hyundai, which we've shared with everyone. It's no secret. We call it ABC. We like to keep things simple at Hyundai. And so imagine a pyramid, a triangle. A is assurance. And assurance is everything we do to build trust and confidence in the brand. So it's the Assurance Job Loss Vehicle Protection Program. It's America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000-mile powertrain, 5 years, 60,000-mile bumper-to-bumper vehicle warranty that is fully transferable, that part. People often miss that. That by itself makes it an amazing warranty. We cover roadside assistance for 5 years. So if you run out of gas, your battery goes dead, lock your keys in the car, we will come and take care of you. I mean, nobody else does stuff like this, you know?
They used to,
and in various phases, and people have gotten in and out of the warranty game. You know, we've been in there for 10 years now. We've had that warranty. And we've had to overcompensate because of the issues we had in the late 80s and early 90s with trust and confidence due to our lackluster quality start, right? So we've had to overcompensate. We've turned a weakness into a strength. So that's the A. The B is something we call Blue Drive, which is our social responsibility initiative. We want to lead the industry in fuel economy. We want to be the global eco leader. We're number one in the U.S. industry in fuel economy right now, much to Honda's chagrin. We're the only brand over 30 miles per gallon in the CAFE estimates for Hyundai brand. And then the top of this pyramid, the C, is where you were going, John. C stands for connection, the emotional connection we know we have to make with customers. I would argue, you would agree with me, that first generation of 24/7 products, if they were missing anything, it was that ability to connect emotionally with the customer from a design point of view, from a driving involvement point of view. And we decided, you know, if we want to really be tier one, we have to nail that. And so our incredibly competent R&D team went to work, and starting with Tucson and what you're going to see over the next set of product launches, this consistent, exciting design leadership, real fun-to-drive vehicle dynamics, which a lot of people still haven't really understood. I still hear reviews and read reviews where Motor Trend wrote one just recently on the Genesis. Their expectation is Hyundai must have wanted this to drive like a Lexus LS. No. We absolutely did not want that. The target for this car was more like an Infiniti M, a more engaging vehicle. That's what we were looking for. And so we have to bust through, I think, some of those perceptions still to make sure that people are coming along with us. But that's really going to be an important part of our growth, this idea of an emotional connection with the brand.
To bounce off.
Was that under 5 minutes? did I get that in under 5 minutes? I think it might have been close.
I still have a question. Go ahead.
But bounce off Peter's point. When did the light bulb go on at Hyundai, and were you the one who brought it there that said, guys, we have to have an emotional connection?
I think it was.
Because I don't think Honda's got great stuff, but I'm not sure from a design standpoint they've got that emotional connection, and I would say Toyota doesn't.
I think it was a happy alignment of timing elements and personalities, certainly not just myself, but Joel Piaskowski, our former designer, definitely had that gene. He came to Hyundai specifically because of the original Santa Fe, the first generation Santa Fe. Now, say what you like about that car. It was polarizing in the truest and purest form of that term. Many people use polarizing about designs that are unequivocally gorgeous, and that's not polarizing. Polarizing means half the people really like it, half the people really hate it, or something like that, right? That car was that. And his point of view was, wow, if there's a company like that out there that's willing to take that much of a risk on design, I want to be there because I think I might have a shot to get some of my good work through. And so you saw that from some of Joel's work, for example, most recently, this fluidic sculpture language and the Sonata design really came under Joel's tutelage. And now we've got Phil Zak, another incredible designer, another guy we got from GM who's continuing that with really strong, vibrant design.
So are you doing that all in California?
A lot of the stuff from California. So a lot of our recent designs, Elantra, Veracruz, Sonata, all from California, Genesis Coupe from California. Genesis was primarily led from the Korean studio. The Equus, which is coming out soon, began in Korea, had a big kind of redo that happened out of California and then was finished in Korea. It's pretty much a global process, but you'll typically have a lead studio that won a design competition in the early going.
I think the Sonata is very interesting. It's probably the first Hyundai. Now, some people say it's derivative looking, it reminds them too much of the CLS, Mercedes, whatever. I think it's, to me, the most interesting, the most complete new car you've done, and the fact you stuck with your guns with the four-cylinder. You know, just everything about it, the package, that's really where it all came together for me, for Hyundai.
Yeah, that four-cylinder decision that you talk about is an interesting one, and I love to tell the story. I was flying you know, actually flying out to the Detroit show, and I had the good pleasure of sitting next to an executive from one of the other Japanese automakers on the West Coast. And he'd heard about our all-four-cylinder approach, and he...
Meaning no V6 at all. No V6 at all in the Sonata.
Bold decision, right? No one had really ever done that before in a volume midsize car. And he said, I'm really glad you guys did that, because we've been trying to get our guys to agree to get that done. And the answer was, no, everyone else has a V6. We have to have one, too. What's different about Hyundai now is we are not afraid to lead. In fact, we just revel in it, and we love it. And our approach is actually pretty simple. We look to the end game. Where's it going to end up? And if it makes sense, as it often does, we say, we're just going to be the first to get there. And we did that with the SC, we did it with satellite radio to a smaller level, and we're doing it now with our powertrain strategy and just getting there first.
Keep talking about that, too, because it's very interesting. You get all kinds of weight savings if you decide not to put a V6 in a car. Go into some of those details. I find that fascinating.
It's fascinating. So the mix rate we enjoyed on Sonata for V6 was about 10-11%. Nissan Altima, the sportiest of the midsize cars, 10-11%. Accord, maybe 20. Enabled by the coupe.
Small percentages, but y'all charge big money for those engines,
premiums,
too.
Big premiums. Camry, about 15%. And Malibu and Fusion, maybe a little bit higher, but not much. So here's the thing, though. Every one of those bodies in white is designed to support the V6. So the front-end sheet metal, the crash structure, often the subframe, are carrying around all this extra weight, and you're package protecting for this V6, so you've got extra volume as well, which reduces designer freedom. So you've got all this extra penalty for the V6 that only 10% of the people are buying, which, by the way, they didn't necessarily want or need. They just bought because it was on the dealer lot, because so few cars are sold directly from a customer order these days. So, you know, we thought, we'll just let it go. And we felt positive about it because we had two wonderful countermeasures. One's called Azera, which is our V6 upper midsize car, which we could always fall back on. For those who wanted a V6, you can have this. But the ace up our sleeve is this wonderful 2-liter turbo that we have coming.
That none of us have driven yet.
That none of you have driven yet. But I promise you, you will love it. And Chris Hosford won't let me say what the horsepower rating actually is for this car just yet, other than it's well over 250 horsepower. And when you drive it, you will say, okay, I get it. Who needs a V6?
So it has everything, great. Direct injection, all the tricks.
Indeed, yeah. Okay. And we've done that, Peter, with the base engine on the base Sonata. So it's right. All direct injection, the base car with 198 horsepower, 35 miles per gallon. And the darn thing weighs only 3,199 pounds, which
is,
means...
these days, that's featherweight.
Featherweight.
And that's what, about 100 pounds over the previous Sonata?
Yeah, about 100 pounds, a little more than a 100-pound weight reduction.
You know, I don't know the last time I went to an introduction of a car where they said, and by the way, it's lighter.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen.
2 pounds lighter.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe 50 pounds here
right.
or there.
So 50 pounds is what? Committing to only doing four cylinders, you
more
take 50 pounds out there, and then the other 50 came from what?
Just, you know, one of the things I like to talk about is, because this question we get all the time, how did you guys improve so quickly? What was the secret? If you take the number of engineers we have globally, which is a pretty big number, maybe 8,000 or 9,000, divide that by the number of product programs they've done over the last 5 years, I'm sure that ratio really favors us in terms of doing more and more product programs per engineer. Our guys have just done more work on faster cycle, and they're learning more and more quickly. And typically, they're doing a wide range of products, you know, maybe everything from Accents to Santa Fe's or whatever for a certain group of door system engineers. So they're benchmarking all the competitive products across many different segments and learning about the latest innovations and then innovating on their own and finding better solutions. I think that's been a big part of it. You know, we're just doing more engineering these days, and we're getting better at it faster because of it.
Well, back to the decision to go for a leadership position, I think what I'm seeing is that enabled Hyundai to then stake out also a personality to go with it. And deciding that leadership element needed to be there and to connect, how do you connect? You have to connect with personality
and
style.
Right.
And so it's neat to watch this all come together.
Right, because you'd hate to be a leader that had unforgettable or uninspiring design or rather boring driving dynamics, but we led an attribute X, Y, and Z. It just, that doesn't play, right?
It doesn't. I'm going to be very interested to see the Turbo 4. It sounds very exciting. I've driven the regular Sonata and enjoyed it very much. But that V6 buyer, I mean, part of the reason that the take rate is so low on V6 is the cost. of that model
the
versus
$1,500 to $2,000, right?
Right.
For a V6 in the midsize segment.
As I understand it, your Turbo 4 needs to still have that kind of a premium. So you're going to have roughly, and we haven't released pricing, but roughly that kind of a premium for a four-cylinder engine. And while I think that there's plenty of people out there who will understand it very quickly, you've got some sort of stuck in the mud or just sort of mainstream buyers that haven't quite thought about that.
Yeah.
They'll look at it and go, why am I going to spend $2,000 for a four-cylinder car versus a V6 car?
Yeah.
So I'm curious to watch the whole transition. You get to kind of learn the public a little bit and lead in changing some perceptions.
We had a dealer council meeting. We consider ourselves a very dealer-centric company at Hyundai, and we are. We meet with our council three times a year. I was just spent a week with our 40 top dealers in Cayman, and one of the requests that we never thought we'd hear from our dealers was, we need more Azeras, which we were delighted to hear that, but they're already beginning to see more interest in that particular car. At the same time that the Sonata is selling like gangbusters. So we're bringing all kinds of new people into the brand for Sonata, and those traditional buyers, and there are folks, Stephanie, just like you mentioned, they're realizing, well, you know, maybe I'm going to have to get the Azera. And that the price point of that car, it starts around $25,000, which is very similar to the V6 price points for Accord and Camry. Small factoid, you will be amazed by this. John, you know this from this morning. The Azera is actually shorter than an Accord or a Mazda 6. So, you know, those mid-sized cars from those two brands, because there is no other sedan in the lineup above them, have had to err on the side of being perhaps a little bit too big for the mainstream segment. We've had the liberty, like Ford and Chevrolet and Nissan and Toyota, to have a two sedan strategy covering mid-size and large. It's cool.
I happen to bring in a prop with me. I've got a piston from the engine in the Sonata. Talk a little bit about this, because I've never seen a piston in a mass production car, to me, that looks this small and this light.
Yeah, and it really does kind of give you an indication of how far we've gotten. You heard Chubba Chetta, the former editor of Car and Driver, at our discussion this morning, talking about how this piston looks just like a Ferrari Formula One piston he has on his desk from about 10 years ago. I mean, that's how far the pace of automotive engineering has moved over the past couple of years. But I mean, it's a classic high-compression piston. You can see how carefully it's been designed. Anti-friction material here on the side, three rings. I'm not a powertrain engineer, so I can't tell you the wherewithal and why for every part of this thing. All I know is when I look at it, it looks like an extremely well-engineered part. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
And I think that's what I was getting at, why I wanted to bring that out is, I mean, you guys are going through details and stuff that certainly Hyundai never did before, and I'm not sure that other mass producers are taken to this level.
This particular piston, as I recall, weighs something on the order of 20 or 25 grams less than a comparable Toyota Camry piston. And we talked about that when we launched the car at the LA Auto Show as an example of the detailed, focused obsession we have on weight. You know, and if you can take 25 grams out of something that's going up and down 6,000 times per minute, that's the most important weight you want to take out of the car, right? And it's just that attention to detail and thousands of engineering decisions like this one that lead to a car that weighs 3,199 pounds, right? It's pretty good. So we're getting there. We're definitely raising our game.
You're also spending a lot more money on advertising, too. I mean, you guys were all over the Super Bowl, all over the Academy Awards. Talk a little bit about where's the money coming from? Usually, you know, advertising budgets are the ones that are really squeezed.
Yeah, and what's amazing is our budgets have been fairly flat over these last few years, but I think we've been able to make it look like we were spending a lot more money because of this strategy, which we call big voices in big places. And the basic thinking behind that is, the issue with the Hyundai brand, the challenge with the Hyundai brand, isn't one that you can really resolve with targeted marketing. It's something that everyone needs to hear at the same time. So those who have been thinking about entering the brand know that their neighbor heard the message too, so that they have less explaining to do when they bring home the Sonata, and the first question they get asked is, why didn't you buy a Camry? You know, aren't you supposed to buy a Camry or an Accord? Isn't that what you're supposed to buy? And not that our owners are afraid to have that discussion. In fact, we find many of them. The core Hyundai customer we have labeled the confident nonconformist from years ago. They did the research. They found out about found out about the car, and they were very comfortable buying it. That's changing now as we become a much more mainstream brand. And this Big Voices in Big Places media strategy has really helped accelerate that, we think. Our consideration has gone over the last few years from, you know, looking at Allison Fisher data, from, you know, 20% maybe in 2005 or so to around 30%. We finished around 28% this year, which is great, big, huge leaps of people now willing to consider Hyundai.
How did you describe your buyers again?
I would say 5 years ago or so, Peter, our core buyer, someone who had a confident nonconformist.
Okay, because that's almost like
confident nonconformist.
But that's like what your company is. Because you're not trying to become America's car company like Toyota once did, and now they're going down in flames.
Yeah.
Honda's always been sort of the engineering-focused company that goes their own way.
Yeah.
But you're sort of taking what Honda did and then, but turning it more of a mainstream. You have no interest in becoming America's car company, do you?
No interest right now in entering the segments that we're not represented in right now. You know, we have no pickup truck plans on the drawing board, for example. We do want to do things our own way, and frankly, it's hard to see how a pickup truck or a commercial van like Nissan's new van project might fit with our brand. I'm not saying never. We never say never at Hyundai, but not for now.
Sir. So what about being the best, like you say? Where does racing at the highest level enter in? Does Hyundai believe in racing as a place to demonstrate their technical prowess? And if they do, where will they end up? ALMS, NASCAR?
Yeah, it's a great question, and we are thinking what should we do? It's hard for us to see the math on NASCAR just because there's very little linkage to
I'm glad to hear that.
Actual product. F1 is a bit of a tough sell in the U.S. market in particular. ALMS might make some sense. And so right now we're dabbling. We've got a wonderful association with Reese Millen, with Genesis Coupe, in the drift car. Reese is building an amazing full-on prototype car to set an all-time world record. Our hope for Pikes Peak this year. He set a class record this past year, just as he used up all of his rear tire. I don't know if you saw that, but it was fascinating and amazing and thrilling. He passed the finish line with a flat rear tire, and still broke the record. So we'll see. That's kind of our initial foray.
So it's down the road then?
Down the road a little bit. Down the road a little bit.
Okay. Hey, we've got a bunch of questions that we got from viewers here, and I think this is a good point to jump into that.
Bring them on, John.
Not the full rapid-fire segment yet, but okay. We've got a number of people. Okay, let's see here. Otter Bruce from Twitter wrote in to ask, Hyundai has the Equus coming. Will we see an ultra-high-performance car a la Nissan GT-R?
Boy, that gets far out in our forward model product plan. Let me just say that's a concept under study. We've got a wonderful rear-wheel drive component set now. This Genesis platform, which Genesis Coupe to Genesis, extraordinary amount of under-the-skin commonality. You would not believe that the subframe, front subframe, is identical between those cars. 3.8 power pack, even the front floor pan, absolutely astonishing. And we stretch and shrink and send them this way and that all the way to Equus. So we're getting very capable at doing very flexible things with this rear-wheel drive component set, and that's one of the things we're looking at.
Very,
you do,
very
you
interesting.
Do that, and you put it in ALMS, and then we're good to go.
Hey, that solves the problems at once.
GT.
Dr. Nick has a good question here. He says, does Hyundai have any plans on how to avoid some of the growing too large, too fast syndrome that hit Toyota?
You know, our basic idea is we should never be satisfied with where we are. This is how Hyundai feels. This is a strong internal corporate philosophy. I sign off all my notes at Hyundai to the team and our dealers with stay hungry, stay humble. The thought being that, you know, if you start thinking too highly of yourself and what you're doing, you're in trouble right away. Nothing breeds failure like success and too much success. So the antidote to that is to set really ambitious targets that we have no idea how we're going to meet. This is another ethos within the company.
That'll keep you humble.
It keeps us humble. And, you know, and it's one of the things where we have had some turnover in the staff at Hyundai. And one of the cultural things I think that's difficult for some is if you're not used to that, is very different from how most other companies operate. Truly, we believe that if you've set a target and you already have a plan to get there, all you've done is set a horrible target and haven't done as good as you can. So we've become really quite adept at setting these really ambitious targets. Sometimes we talk about them, sometimes we don't. But they're there internally and they drive us and they keep us working so hard that, you know, we don't know if we're ever going to hit them. And it keeps us from ever feeling smug and self-satisfied.
Salvador G. writes in to ask, what does John Krafcik think of the J.D. Powers findings? And I'm assuming he's referring to
VDS?
The Vehicle Dependability Survey.
Yeah, we love it. The results are terrific. So, you know, it's easier for us to show the improvement in initial quality because you get that feedback straight away. With a VDS survey, it's 3 years, and I think we're looking at stuff that's this 2007 model
yep.
year vehicles that they looked at. And I think we finished 11th above industry average. Which is great. We're Acura and Cadillac were our two closest neighbors, which is great. Nissan is well in our dust now, and you know it feels really good to have that validation from high mileage reliability. We've had that for a while from Consumer Reports. They put us number 4 in the industry this year from a high mileage reliability. So all that hard work is finally paying off. We've known it for years with our warranty. We've had to be good on high mileage reliability because we have a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty and a 5-year, 60,000-mile vehicle warranty. That decision was not only a wonderful marketing decision, but that enforced an incredible discipline on our engineering team that has led to this. The basic Hyundai design credo is you design for infinite life. So we design our components for infinite life because with the warranty, which we plan to continue, if you didn't do that, you'd have really high warranty.
You'd pay for it in the warranty, if not up front.
Run.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, we got a phone call here, too. Ben, let's bring in the one we've got, Jude Butler on the line.
Hello, folks. This is Jude Butler from Beaverton, Oregon, and I've got a question about the direction that Hyundai's going. With the Equus and Genesis definitely pushing into the luxury field, how does Hyundai reconcile the message those two products send with vehicles like the Accent and Elantra, which are some of the least expensive vehicles on offer? Also, how are Hyundai and Kia going to be kept from stepping on one another's toes in the mass market? Thanks.
Yeah. Good question.
Yeah, two great questions. So the basic idea is wherever we play, we want to be the best, and we want to set a new standard. And we're well known and established in segments where Accent and Elantra compete, and we do quite well there. Less so in Genesis and Equus. But, I mean, a wonderful statistic. If you look at mid-luxury segment, 5 Series, E-Class, CTS, STS kind of stuff, Lincoln MKS, we've been running a consistent since Genesis launched. This is just the sedan now, 5, 6, 7% segment share. Now, our total market share is 4.2. So we're actually over-penetrating in that segment, which is amazing. Genesis Coupe, same thing in the mid-sporty segment. So, you know, consumers in those groups, they don't seem to be very different from our typical mass market segments. And we've been almost emboldened by that as we've decided to go forward with Equus. You know, we've enjoyed good, solid year-over-year sales increases for Genesis. Our Equus volume aspirations are very modest. I mean, we're talking 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 units, something like that. Whereas Genesis allowed us to establish, we think, a product halo for the brand, the idea with Equus is something different. The idea with Equus is customer experience halo. So we're going to do some really interesting things with that car. It will be sold through a select group of Hyundai dealers, and we're going to do things, for example, like valet service, where the Equus owner can just give us a call. We will go to where they are, drop off a Genesis loaner car for them, take their Equus away for the oil change, and then bring it back later, wherever they like. We're going to come up with ways to differentiate our service and maybe move beyond one of the last frontiers that we have to break down, which is belief that the Hyundai showroom experience, the Hyundai ownership experience and contact with Hyundai perhaps isn't as good as it could be or isn't as good as Lexus or others. We want to just blow that out of the water. So that's another one of our aspirational targets we've set with Equus. His second question was on Kia, a great question. One of the things we do is all U.S. executives, when they join Hyundai or Kia, have to sign a piece of paper that says, I promise not to share information with my counterparts at Kia. And it's just this thing that we do to ensure that we stay separate. We've got separate design facilities. We've got separate marketing, sales, product planning. We share back office stuff. We share the same captive finance company. We share the same IT group within the Hyundai group. But otherwise, really great distinction between the two. Our designers on the Hyundai side don't mix with the designers on the Kia side. Peter Schreier is doing a great job with the Kia stuff. I think it's gorgeous, beautiful, but completely differentiated from the Hyundai product. We made one mistake, I have to admit, the Hyundai Entourage and the Kia Sedona. That was a badge engineering approach, something we'll never do again. You know, we tried it once. It didn't work. Everyone in the auto industry should know that that doesn't work. And we admitted the mistake and left that market to Kia after just 2 years.
Look, we could talk to you for the whole rest of the show, but I know you've got a plane to catch.
Yeah.
So, John, thanks so much for coming in and joining us here for AutoLine After Hours. Great having you.
Thanks.
And we'll be back in a moment after this brief break.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.
So, Stephanie, what do you make of John Krafcik and where Hyundai's going?
I've met John a few times, and I'm a real big admirer of his. But I think that Hyundai, if they can stay on course with the actions that they've taken so far and let their growth be natural, as opposed to maybe getting towards the end of the year, if they start getting disappointed that their growth this year might be 1% instead of a 1.5% increase and starting to put money on the hood, things like that. If they start kind of veering off that direction, they can lose some ground. But if they can stay, hold true to the course and let it be natural growth, they can continue to see growth.
And that's going to be tough for them.
I was just going to ask you, Peter, can they do that?
Because the Korean management have demonstrated in the past that they have a real problem with that. Well, didn't you say something about we set goals? And
yep.
Boy, and I'm right with Stephanie on that. They need to just keep what they're doing and not get ahead of themselves. The moment they do, they run into trouble, they make mistakes, they could easily go off the rails if they're not careful.
I think John's one of the most interesting executives in the business. I think the guy's got a bright future, but I worry about the Koreans are real impatient. The Hyundai Koreans are real impatient, and we've seen this last decade.
I think there's at least five top executives, American executives, who've been jettisoned, some less than 18 months.
Yeah, in just the last decade.
Yeah.
And so that's my fear is that, you know, John is growing sales and market share for them, but their goal may be higher than what he's going to be able to achieve in this kind of a market. And they go, hey, let's get somebody else in there. That's my fear for him.
Well, it is. You know, he's also spearheading and leading their, as they define their own personality and figure out how to go forward and come up with a cohesive market and a cohesive strategy more so than they had in the past. And that's could work out really well for him, hopefully. But like you've alluded to, we know that they're not particularly patient and they don't have a history of keeping their Americans around very long.
And their head of marketing is going to Nissan.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they, yeah.
Just announced lost, Joel Iwanowicz.
Iwanowicz, right. So, yeah, key loss for them there.
Yes, significant. And we were just talking in the break. What about the models do you think are the most recognizable to the American consumer that Hyundai has?
I would say Sonata, although America still doesn't know the new Sonata yet.
Right.
They will, and it's a terrific car. And I would say Tucson.
A
little sport Ute crossover.
So those are the two main
ones?
Still
Elantra. Still a high recognition for Elantra.
Okay, and Accent maybe down on the next level. So they got, you know, they've got a ways to go still. And then the Genesis is new.
Right.
Genesis needs 5 solid years, you know, before people start saying, oh, yeah, get me one of them Genesis. <You know? laughs> And then they've got the Equus coming. You know, that's a whole nother thing.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got to be careful.
The marketing budget for Sonata is significant for this launch year. That's the other.
The first time they're spending, what, $100
million? $160 million.
Well, that's
twice as much as they spent on Genesis.
Well, that's what they have to do.
Right.
Absolutely. But it also means next year they have to then still spend $80 million just to support it. Launch and leave doesn't work in this market.
Great point.
That's the old domestic way.
And Nissan's way.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah. There's more than one example.
Old Joel's got his hands full to go to Nissan, I'll tell you that much.
Yes, he does.
The Leaf.
The Leaf.
Congratulations.
The Leaf is going to be easy to sell for the first year, but come around year 3 and 4, that ain't going to be easy.
I'd say come around 16 months in. You don't have to even wait that long. I mean, you know, the first on the block with this electric stuff is going to be, it's going to be great, and then it's just going to be a big lull in a sort of a, you know, precursor to the crash, because, you know, that's going to be an adjustment for some of these manufacturers because they're obsessed with this electric stuff, and they're going to be shocked that, well, what happened? It was great for a year, and then it's over.
Mm-hmm.
The infrastructure isn't there yet, and it hasn't. While on the coast, you definitely have early adapters that are very interested in electric. It hasn't filtered to the mainstream yet. And if an ideal market is 15 million units, there aren't that many people that are ready to embrace that technology yet.
But wait a minute. What does Fisker say he's going to sell? 15,000 electric Karmas for $85,000 a piece?
Yeah.
In 1 year?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Rots a ruck, boys. Rots a ruck. I just don't buy it. You know, and again, I keep pointing out that we've had hybrids for over a decade now. There's something like 7 different brands that sell 25 different models of hybrid or 20 or whatever the number is, and they still account after more than a decade for about 2.5% of sales. So for me, when you bring out electrics that are going to be substantially more expensive, have to involve some sort of infrastructure build, even if it's just putting a charger system in your garage for $1,500 installed, and you introduce this concept of range anxiety. And to me, it's easy to say, in a decade, they're not even going to be at 2.5%. I mean, that's how I look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. But on the other side, it's if you look out 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, it's not going to get anywhere if these first baby steps aren't made. So it is important that the manufacturers are investing in it and trying to get consumers to think about it. I think the infrastructure hurdles are a little bit more elaborate than they want to think. I mean, if we think about the local Detroit area, we don't have smart meters at our house yet. And I'm really not excited about paying for one of those, whether it's through a direct bill or through increased rates. And I suspect that you're going to find resistance there. Consumers aren't necessarily going to want to pay for the upgrades to the infrastructure that are going to be needed for 2% of the population to have an electric car.
Right. Well, that's what I've said. Any alternative that involves infrastructure, new infrastructure, I'd say I'm not putting my money there. I'm putting my money on alternatives that can use existing infrastructure, and that's why I'm still so bullish on biofuels. Yeah. You can pretty much use what we already have.
But still, you're never going to get anywhere if you don't try it and
True.
If you don't do the research
right.
and do the improvements now. I'm glad that those companies are out there and that they're making a lot of noise and that they're really going forward with their targets, even if I think their targets are ambitious.
Good point. But, hey, we've got more questions to get to from you, our viewers. So, Ben, let's bring up the rapid-fire graphic. Okay, we've got a question from Jim here who says, I've never seen any list about quality that Range Rover doesn't rank at the bottom. What surprises me is that people still give them money and buy them. What's up with that?
You know, that's one of the great mysteries of the modern automotive business, because I don't know what it is either, but people just love those things, even though they're at the dealership once a month for something. I don't get it.
You jump into it, and it feels all sumptuous, and it feels it all
smells good.
Smells great.
Smells like a British smoking room.
And yeah, and I don't have one in my driveway, but
no.
But you know, but the couple times I've driven one, you get in, and you're like, yeah, this feels really good.
Yeah, but it is one of the mysteries of the modern world.
Is. Then you get out and you look at the price tag, and it doesn't feel quite that good.
Okay, let's see what else here. We've got Mike D. White says, will Kia's new products help it succeed like Hyundai, or will the two brands just cannibalize each other?
We talked about that earlier. And John clearly, you know, when we were talking about Audi's problems with Volkswagen and vice versa, he clearly didn't see that was an issue. But, you know, he also mentioned that Kia and Hyundai were that separate. So I imagine we're going to start seeing Kias pushing up against Hyundais in a big hurry here.
We'll have to, because eventually their price is going to start to come up a little bit. And they'll be fighting against one another eventually, a little bit more than they are. But there's still enough room in the marketplace for them to be able to do that. If the company really wants to keep those two separate, they can have two siblings that are set to fight each other every other day.
Yeah.
You know, as long as they're still making money.
George from Brooklyn. All right. Brooklyn is with us. He asks, how will the new Caprice compete against the new Ford Police Interceptor?
That's going to be interesting because the Caprice is, you know, the G8, which is...
rear drive imported from Australia.
Yeah, slightly smaller footprint than the Taurus. And rear-wheel drive, and the standard police Taurus is front-wheel.
But they'll have all-wheel drive available.
With the EcoBoost motor.
Right.
So, I don't know. That's going to be an interesting fight. I mean, the Toyota is a bigger car, but it's not that much bigger inside.
No. And the interesting thing about both of those is it makes police officers and it makes police departments have to accept a solution that they're not very happy about to begin with. They like the old Crown Vic formula. That works for them and
except they all
ways.
Sued Ford over the rear, you know, gas tank fire and then went out and bought more of them.
You know what? They'll get over the whole Crown Vic thing. You watch. Once
they
drive the Caprice and the new Taurus, they'll say, I got to get me one of these. Yeah. So that'll be an old argument pretty quick.
Reno Diggs asks, and I don't remember this. He says, remember the unintended acceleration in the late 60s to early 70s when you made a left turn in many GM V8s? Something with the motor mounts would break and you'd get unintended acceleration?
Well, there was a motor mount issue back then. I barely remember it. And then if the motor mount broke, yeah, it did something to the throttle linkage. But we're going back into the dark ages now, so I don't remember.
Well, clearly it was caused by cosmic rays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, if you don't like what I write, it's the cosmic rays.
Yes.
That's my permanent excuse.
Put your tinfoil cap on and
can Ben
protect
tell
yourself.
Us how many times we've said cosmic rays today? I want to get it up there. See how far.
Okay, Tom from Kansas City wants to know, how did Mini manage such a dramatic fall from grace on the J.D. Power survey? He's talking about the vehicle dependability survey that Mini used to be pretty high up there. He says, I'm shocked about this survey. Fifth from the bottom is a long way to fall from above average.
I can't explain it, but, you know, Mini owners love their Minis and, you know.
Customer expectation gets kind of strange. It has to.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly what the issues were that made that change happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if customers were being more finicky than they were the first time around.
Could be. I don't know.
Okay, this was a question actually for John Krafcik, but we'll throw it to you, Steph. Any chance a small diesel-powered Hyundai will be in North America, like in the rest of the world? The Elantra Touring comes to mind as a great model for it. This is from Kevin from Columbus, Ohio.
Hyundai seems to be looking for this market for gasoline direct injection solution more than diesel because, like it or not, most Americans are not going to buy a diesel. The demand still is not there. You know, certainly, I think they're fun. The three of us probably.
We all love
three.
Them. We all
we
love
think
them.
They're great fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, outside of Super Duty pickup trucks, Americans don't really.
What about BMW, Audi, Mercedes?
There's just enough.
when I say that they don't. I mean, and it has increased
Volkswagen.
It's increased a little bit in terms of consideration. Consideration numbers have increased from 3 to 7%. And that's not necessarily take rate, but consideration. And there's enough room for a small diesel segment, and it's owned. It's owned by the European.
Do you know, if you took the Prius out of the hybrid numbers, because Prius is half the hybrid market, right, how would hybrids compare to diesels? Do you know?
I don't. Not off the top of my head.
I got to dig up those numbers. That'd be interesting to look at.
I can probably tell you in about 20 minutes.
That's great. If Ford's deal to sell Volvo to Geely falls through, what does the panel predict will be next for Volvo? Would Ford even consider shutting the brand down? Jeff W. from Albany, New York asks that.
Well, I don't consider as much as Volvo does that they're a luxury brand. They've tried to hit around that, but I just don't think they'll get there. And I don't know. They could just fade away.
They could just fade away.
Over time,
Ford,
I mean,
Ford has picked up all the intelligence they want out of it.
Yeah.
Out of Volvo.
They've decided they don't really need it. So.
Mm-hmm. My guess is if the deal falls through, Ford will start looking for another buyer someplace, somehow.
But it's interesting. They said that there were some problems with the intellectual property that they didn't want to.
Yeah. Right.
But I think that goes into the general issues of international property.
Yeah, make no mistake, this China issue with intellectual property is going to grow to be a huge issue, huge problem.
Jay Cujo wants to know, Cadillac's introducing something at the New York show. Do you have any idea what it is?
Could be the new 3 Series fighter.
Or is it just the turbo version of the SRX?
No, because that's already out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm with Peter.
Okay.
Concept of the 3 Series.
Which is a rear drive, front engine.
Yeah, I've seen them.
Well, obviously,
very,
front engine.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice cars.
Quick question for Peter. Does he like the new Audi commercials?
That's a good question because I really don't like this Audi BMW one-upmanship. When Detroit used to do it, we used to call it crosstown shatter. It was really fun in the country club. Hey, you know, we busted your chops on that ad, didn't we? Yeah. But this is kind of, I don't like that. The one Audi, the zombie commercial is okay, except they make fun of red Italian sports cars, which I don't like. But I really don't like this BMW Audi one-upmanship. I think it's stupid. I think BMW should focus on Ultimate Drive Machine, and Audi should focus on their own stuff and not worry about each other so much.
Hey, we got a phone call. Somebody on the line here. Ben, let's bring him in.
Hey, guys. Jonathan Brown out in Old Japan, New Jersey. I'm calling to let you guys know that I think the Volt is awesome. The Fisker is cool, even if it might be vaporware. But that Leaf, I don't know. Who's going to buy that thing? Where does it come from? Why does it look so bad? And why is it so expensive? And why doesn't it have a regular engine like the Volt has? Extend the range. I don't know. Between the Volt and the Leaf, what do you think is going to sell better? Thank you very much. Keep up the great work, guys.
Thanks for the call. That's great. Very good questions
too. The Leaf is all electric without a gasoline motor because Carlos Ghosn is a firm believer in electricity forward.
He's all in.
He's all in. On a global basis. Yeah. I'm not even sure he's all in for the United States per se. I don't think he has incredibly unrealistic expectations for the States. But globally, that's where he sees the future, and that's where he's putting the eggs. All the eggs are in that basket for them. Why it looks so funny looking? It is a global vehicle. Hatchbacks of that size do sell very well outside of the United States, and it's not getting two different body styles. And because of Prius's hatchback success and that it looked a little bit different, while Leaf was being designed, there was still the assumption that you had to make sure you put it in that egg shape in order to let everybody else know that it's some sort of alternative powertrain vehicle.
Well, I think they're overly ambitious. They're going to be building these cars in Japan, in the United States, and in Europe, in the UK. And they're putting in capacity for, what, like 50,000 for each one of them. They're spending a boatload of money to tool these things up, even though they're getting government money in each one of these locations. I just don't see sales coming up to
Dominion. I think we got to get Simon on the horn and ask him. Simon is Carlos's PR guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Simon Spruill. Yeah. Actually, I'll be seeing him in 2 weeks. I'll be at the New York show.
Oh, so
York,
to
catch up. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
We should do that together then.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's another question. Here's about racing. He says, how is it accepted in stock cars that drivers can launch into one another? And this is called payback, not reckless endangerment. And I'll chop this down. He says, what stock car racing needs is Paul Tracy, not Danica Patrick. What say you? What do you say, Peter?
Well, let's not forget that NASCAR, before the season, made an edict and said, you boys can... We've been too politically correct with you guys, and we're losing our fan base, so you guys can rough each other up on the track. Well, that could have been disastrous, that incident with Carl Edwards and Brad Keselowski. But now they're pulling the wing off the car. They're going back to a spoiler. You know, I don't know what to say about NASCAR. I have a lot of respect for the drivers and the teams. They're tremendously talented. I've never been a fan of the NASCAR marketing machine. They have completely lost their way. And so I really got nothing good to say about it. And, yeah, Paul Tracy tried NASCAR for a while, and he didn't really like it. I don't blame him. He's an open-wheel guy. He mm-hmm. should be driving today. Mm-hmm. He's not ready to retire. It's too bad. And, by the way, don't forget to watch Sebring on Saturday.
Sebring 12 hours. That ought to be a great race. And the Peugeots are in there now.
Yeah, they'll smoke everybody, but the race is the GT battle between Corvette, Ferrari, BMW, and Porsche. That's the race, and that'll be, you watch, at the end of 12 hours, there'll be six cars within a half a second or a second of each other for the win. It'll be good.
That ought to be awesome. Here's a question from Mike in Burlington, Ontario. I'd like to get your guys' opinion as to whether the Fiesta, new Focus, and the existing Taurus, what he's asking is there going to be any room in the lineup for the Fusion? He said, I saw the new Focus at the Detroit show, and it didn't seem that much smaller than the Fusion. The Fusion's a great car, but will it get squeezed out? Pretty good question. Ford's starting to bunch up a bunch of cars there.
That's a good question. We'll kind of have to wait and see on that, because the pricing is right on top of one another. And Focus is getting more expensive, and Fiesta is expensive, and we'll just kind of have to see a little bit on that.
Clearly the forward look of Ford design is really going to be, that's going to be an interesting thing with consumers.
It'll be interesting for a couple of years to have the Focus and the Fusion next to each other and the Taurus, just because their designs are so different.
Yeah.
I've been saying all along that car prices are going to go up. The only way that car makers can meet CAFE is to sell a lot more small cars. The days of selling them at a loss are over. They are only going to invest into new product if they know they can make a return on it. And the only way that you can make a return on a small car is to start raising the price on it. You just can't cut the cost enough.
And they're not the small cars American consumers are, you know, stereotyping or used
to.
Right.
These are premium products.
With great, lots of features, and we've gotten a lot smarter about filling space in the vehicle, and making sure that the seats are just right, and making it feel bigger inside, and more storage space, and more cubby space. All of those things will make these cars much more satisfying than the Econoboxes we remember.
Well, let's take one more here, and Peter, it's to you. You've been in the business 22 years. What do you think about the GM marketing of the TBS TV show, The Certain Age of Men, and do you think we need the old school September model reveal? Two different questions there.
Yeah, I don't know. It's 32 years now.
Yeah.
I'm getting older by the day. What was the first part?
It was, what do you think about the GM marketing on the TBS, channel TBS, TV show, Certain Age of Men? I don't know that show.
Oh, that's not the name.
Yeah.
I like the show, so I don't think it hurts from them to men of a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fine that they're on that. And I would love to see classic old style fall introductions, but, you know, it's not the world we live in. In the old days, you didn't have legions of people running around with cameras and camera phones and you know, destroying every last vestige of a surprise. And plus, the manufacturers can't help it. They show stuff like 18 months before it's coming out. They can't even stop it. So would I like to go back to that old excitement? Sure, but we'll never see it again.
Yeah, no, we'll never see it. You know, because back in those days, you had GM, Ford, and Chrysler, and American Motors. I'm talking, you know, like from 1960 to, you know.
And it was a huge deal. You're talking about small-town dealers in small-town America. They would paper their windows over, showroom windows over. They would conceal the models being brought in. It was a big deal. And on announcement day, it was like everything was changed and new. And there was nothing like it. I mean, we'll never see it again.
No, people can't wait.
They can't wait. And you made a great point there. You can't keep that stuff secret anymore. Mm. I mean, we're looking at spy shots 3 years before the vehicle's in production.
What about our?
Oh yeah, and we've got a question here. What's our new neon sign? And it's the latest addition to the set of Autoline After Hours. And it's a stylized version of a Roadster. And I was down at the Autorama Classic Car Show in Detroit 2 weeks ago, I guess this was. And I saw one of those signs, and I thought, I got to have that. It's the perfect thing to have on the set.
Yeah,
so,
that's cool.
So that's why we've got our stylized Roadster sort of hovering over Stephanie's head there. But anyway, it's time to wrap this show up. Steph, great having you on.
Thanks. Love being here.
It's been terrific having you here. Peter, as always, everybody's got to go check out the extremists, the auto extremists. And it's just been terrific. And remember, you can always follow Peter at autoextremist.com. Stephanie, anything that you want to push here of... Does Auto Pacific have a website?
We have
with
a website
cool
at
stuff on it.
www.autopacific.com. We also have a website where you can jump in and participate in consumer surveys at vehiclevoice.com. And those answers at various points do make their way all the way back to manufacturers, so you can let them know what you think of your cars and what's going on.
Vehiclevoice.com.
Vehiclevoice.com.
Very interesting. And of course, you can always follow us at facebook.com/AutolineDetroit. Twitter us at twitter.com/AutoLine.
I'm on Twitter, too. I just not on it as much as all my friends would like me to be on.
We're on Facebook as well.
Yeah, I'm not.
And remember,
have
too,
to.
If any of you out there have got a BlackBerry or a smartphone, check out Stitcher. Just go Google that, and you'll find out about it, and you can listen to AutoLine After Hours or daily on your phone.
Well, and actually, Stitcher is one of the companies that built an app for Sync. So if you've got the upcoming Ford Sync apps, you can watch it in the car.
All right. That's way cool. So anyway, thanks. Great show.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutolineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Passion for excellence.